pray. Gracious God, we come this day to be a part of a community that's called to love one another. We find blessings and joy in this time of sharing and of loving and being loved. We also confess that we haven't always gotten it right. We need your forgiveness. We need your help that we might better be that living example of the love that Christ commanded. So as your Spirit has enabled us, may we continue to seek to love. And as your Scriptures have been read and are now proclaimed, by that same Spirit, may the words of my mouth, the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you. For you, O Lord, are our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. So we are in this season after Easter and moving toward Pentecost, but we find ourselves looping back a little bit in this story of Jesus, because John chapter 13 is considered part of what's referred to as Jesus' farewell discourse. Of all of the things that he's saying and doing to say goodbye to the disciples and to prepare them for his departure. Now, this particular text we find in latter part of 13, and first part of chapter 13 is Jesus washing the disciples' feet and saying, as I have done this for you, do this for one another. It's also in this passage where he points to the fact that one of those 12 disciples is going to betray him. And so Judas gets up and leaves, and Jesus says, go and do what you have to do. And the commentators, or the note in the Bible tells us that the others thought, well, since Judas was the one that kept the purse and that was provided for all the needs for things, they just thought Jesus was saying, go and finish getting everything ready for the festival, and you've got things that you need to take care of. And so after Judas has left, Jesus looks to the remaining 11, and he says, all right, I need you to do something. I need you to pay close attention. I need you to listen. I need you to do something for me. Are you ready? Here it is. Love one another. Now, not a profound statement, but yet Jesus is saying, he says it three times in this verse. Love one another. Now, for the disciples, this is not an earth-shattering statement. Because whether they had been following Jesus or not, whether they were Jews or Gentiles or any other religion, this notion of loving one another is not earth-shattering for anybody. People are wired, generally, to care for those that are around them and close to them. Now, we know there are instances where that doesn't happen. But by and large, it's pretty easy to love the people around you. You don't need a whole lot of encouragement to do that. But yet Jesus says, love one another. That was the important message that he was giving them, but it did come with a qualifier. Jesus says, love one another as I have loved you. Well, that's a game changer right there. Because I don't think it was until much later when the disciples look back on all of these events and all of the things that were happening, when they look back and realize, you know what? When we thought Judas was going out to buy all the party supplies for the festival, he was actually going to get the authorities to arrest Jesus. And even as he's walking out of the room, Jesus is looking at us saying, love one another. And being as thick-headed as they often were, it was right on the heels of Jesus having said the disciples love one another that he has this exchange with Peter. And Peter says, where are you going? I'll follow you, Jesus, no matter what. And Jesus says, Peter, you're going to deny me three times before this night's over. And yet Jesus, in that moment, is instructing them and saying, love one another. Now, this notion of love is one that we find throughout Jesus' teachings. In fact, we have that great commandment that actually is two commandments sandwiched together of love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Now, loving God is often seen as the higher one and the better one, and then followed by and love your neighbor as yourself. But the truth of it is, if you're not loving your neighbor, you're not really loving God. And so they go hand in hand, and they're sandwiched together, this ethic, this commandment of Jesus to love. And that is exactly what it is. It's the ethic of this new covenant that's been established through Jesus Christ. An ethic is that set of morals and values that guide actions and decisions. And so Jesus tells us that the ethic for those who follow him is rooted in, grounded in, and simply boiled down to one thing: love. And we have that great commandment of love God and love your neighbor, but yet we find in this passage this morning something a little different. When Jesus says love one another, he's talking to the people who are in the room together, much like we are today. Love one another. Love those who are here. It's not a commandment to go out and share that love with the world yet. But rather, this is insider language. You as a group, you who have answered that call and come to follow me, you need to love one another. In fact, you need to love one another so well that it becomes the defining mark of who you are. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. It's not because you're so generous in the giving to the widows and the orphans. It's not because you're so prolific in your preaching. It's not because you're so service-oriented, so doctrinally sound, so theologically astute. It's none of those things. Your defining hallmark must be and will be how you love one another. I was listening to a talk by Andy Stanley recently, and he was talking about love, and he was saying that he and his wife have talked about it, and that for them, one of the greatest joys they have in life is watching their children interact with one another in positive ways. Now, if you have children, more than one, you know that they don't always get along. At least ours don't. But seeing them get along, seeing them engage in loving acts toward and with one another is a great joy as a parent. And I think that God finds that same joy when he sees the community that has been called together by Jesus Christ acting in such a way that demonstrates that love that they have for one another. But friends, churches don't always get it right. Christians don't always get it right among themselves. I served a church a few years ago, and one of the first Sundays that I, church council meetings that we had there, I walked in and people started coming in, and they had their folders and their notes and minutes from previous meetings. But I also saw a number of people walking in carrying copies of the United Methodist Book of Discipline with them. Now, most other churches that I'd ever served, the copy in the pastor's study was about the only book of discipline to be found. And so I kind of got a little puzzled by, why do I see 1, 2, 3, 4 copies of the book of discipline in the hands of lay people? Because that told me that they were coming ready for a fight. And after the meeting, everything kind of went fine, but one of the guys I'd gotten to know, I pulled him aside and I said, what's with everybody bringing a copy of the book of discipline with them? He said, we've had some contentious meetings. I said, I kind of gather that. He said, several months ago we had a meeting and those two guys that were sitting across from each other were throwing hymnals at each other. Now, friends, this is in a church. And Jesus says, love one another. They will know that you are my followers if you love one another. I think for anybody observing from the outside, a church meeting ending in people throwing hymnals at one another wouldn't send a very good message about what it means to be a part of the church. And we chuckle at a story like that, but Christians don't always get this love for one another right. There's a pastor in our conference who a few years ago, as he puts it, was on a first-name basis with the FBI field agent in Louisville because he had a member, I think maybe members of his church, making death threats against him. And he would take prayer requests that would come up on Sunday morning that would be collected, and he would be opening them, and we're praying for Bill, and we're praying for Mary Jane, and we're praying for so-and-so in our congregation. And he'd open one, and it says, "I hope you and your family die." And he would slide those off to the side. Friends, that's not what the community that Jesus established is about. And I don't know where things go wrong sometimes, but they do. And those are extreme cases of how wrong things can go. But friends, sometimes simply not noticing the people that you're sitting next to can be a way of rejecting and withholding the love that we're called to offer. Simply overlooking that person who seems to be sitting by themselves and not engaged with those around them. And some people want their space, I understand that. But we're called to love. And yes, we have that great command to love God and love one another, or to love our neighbor, but rather we practice what it means to love within the family. What my children learn about what it means to love should begin in our home, so that they can go and share it with other people. What we as the community of faith understand and practice about love within our midst, among one another, should set the framework for the love that we take beyond the walls of the church, the love that we share with our neighbors. There's an art project that began about 10 years ago in New York. It's called Humans of New York. Brandon Stanton was a young amateur photographer who found himself unemployed, wasn't sure what to do, so he thought, I'm going to start this project and go and capture who the people of New York City are. And his goal started out to get 10,000 photographs and images of the people living in New York City. And as he started doing that, it really took off, and the understanding is it's a huge collection of photographs now. But he started interviewing people as he was taking their pictures. It wasn't just candid pictures taken from a distance, but he started interacting with people. And there's one of the images that he has of an elderly woman. She's wearing a mink fur coat. Her gray hair kind of sticks down out from under a mink hat, and she's under an umbrella with cats on it. And the caption that goes with her photo says, "When my husband was dying, I said to him, 'Mo, how am I going to live without you?' And he said to me, 'Take that love that you have for me and go and spread it around.'" I think that's a bit of what Jesus is getting at with the disciples. When he says, love one another. Love one another that you're sitting around the table with right now. Love one another that you're companions with and have traveled with and eaten next to and spent all this time with. Love one another as I have loved you. Take that love that I have had for you. Spread it among yourselves. And my reading of this is because the better we can spread that love among ourselves, the better we'll be at spreading that love to those beyond the group that we're a part of. So will love be the hallmark that this church is known by? Churches have reputations. I've seen all kinds of churches with all kinds of reputations. Oh, that's the church that does the fish fries every month. Oh, that's the church that does the huge garage sale every summer. That's the church where they do those wild and crazy things where they're speaking in tongues and running up and down the aisles waving their hands. But what if we really got serious about making sure that we were known for what Jesus wants us to be known for? Oh, yeah, Central. That's that church where they really care about and love one another. Friends, that's the witness that Christ is calling us to. That we would have such a deep and profound and abiding love for one another. That would be our strength. That would be our attraction. That would be the thing that others would look and say, man, look how they follow Jesus. And that kind of love will overflow and fill the streets around us. So may we love one another as Christ has loved us. Amen.